Chapter 28. Trapped. A warder in a gray-green coat approached Bryn as soon as he rode Traveler past the first stone houses of the village. Bryn would have known the man for a warder after watching him walk two strides, even without all the Aes Sedai faces staring at him in the street. What in the name of light were so many Aes Sedai doing this close to Amadicia? Rumor in villages behind said Aelron meant to claim this bank of the River Eldar, which meant the White Cloaks did. Aes Sedai could defend themselves well, but if Nile sent a legion across the Eldar, a good many of these women would die. Unless he could no longer tell how long a stump had been exposed to air, this place had been buried in the forest 2 months ago. What had Mara gotten herself into? He was sure he would find her here. Village men remembered three pretty young women traveling together, especially when one of them asked directions to a town abandoned since the White Cloak War. The warder, a big man with a broad face, an Ilioner by his beard, planted himself in the street in front of Bryn's big-nosed bay gelding and bowed.
"Lord Bryn, I am Newell Dromond. If you will come with me, there are those who do wish to speak with you."
Bryn dismounted slowly, pulling off his gauntlets and tucking them behind his sword belt as he studied the town. The plain buff-colored coat he wore now was much better for a journey of this sort than the gray silk he had started in. That he had given away. Aes Sedai and warders and others watched him silently, but even those who had to be servants did not look surprised, and Dromond knew his name. His face was not unknown, but he suspected more than that. If Mara was, if they were Aes Sedai agents, it did not alter the oath they had taken.
"Lead on, Newell Gaidin."
If Newell was surprised at the address, he did not show it. The inn that Dromond took him to, or what had been an inn once, had the look of headquarters for a campaign, all bustle and scurry. That is, if Aes Sedai had ever commanded a campaign. He spotted Serenla before she did him, seated in the corner with a big man who was very likely Dalin. When she did see him, her chin dropped almost to the table, and then she squinted at him, as if not believing her eyes. Dalin appeared to be asleep with his eyes open, staring at nothing. None of the Aes Sedai or warders seemed to notice as Dromond led him through, but Bryn would have wagered his manner and lands that any one of them had seen 10 times as much as all the staring servants combined. He should have turned and ridden away as soon as he realized who was in this village. He took careful note as he made his bows while the warder introduced him to the 6-seated Aes Sedai. Only a fool was careless around Aes Sedai. But his mind was on the 2 young women standing against the wall beside the fresh-swept fireplace and looking chastened. The willowy Damani minx was offering him a smile more tremulous than seductive for a change. Mara was frightened, too. Terrified out of her skin, he would say, but those blue eyes still met his, full of defiance. The girl had courage to suit a lion.
"We are pleased to greet you, Lord Bryn," the flame-haired Aes Sedai said.
Just slightly plump, and with those tilted eyes, she was pretty enough to make any man look twice despite the great serpent ring on her finger.
"Will you tell us what brings you here?"
"Of course, Shiriam Sedai."
Newell stood at his shoulder, but if any women needed less guarding from one old soldier, Bryn could not imagine who. He was sure that they knew already, and watching their faces while he told the tale confirmed it. Aes Sedai let nothing be seen that they did not want seen, but at least one of them would have blinked when he spoke of the oath if they had not known beforehand.
"A dreadful story to relate, Lord Bryn."
That was the one called Anaya. Ageless face or not, she looked more like a happy, prosperous farm wife than an Aes Sedai.
"Yet I am surprised that you followed so far, even after Oathbreakers."
Mara's fair cheeks flushed a furious red.
"Still a strong oath, one that should not be broken."
"Unfortunately," Shiriam said, "we cannot let you take them quite yet."
So they were Aes Sedai agents.
"A strong oath that should not be broken, yet you mean to keep them from honoring it?"
"They will honor it," Morel said, with a glance at the pair by the fireplace that made them both stand straighter. "And you may rest assured that they already regret running away after giving it." This time it was Amena who reddened. Mara looked ready to chew rocks. "But we cannot allow it yet." No Ajahs had been mentioned, yet he thought the darkly pretty woman was green, and the stout, round-faced one called Morvrin was brown. Perhaps it was the smile that Morel had given Drummond when the man brought him in, and Morvrin's air of thinking of something else. "In truth, they did not say when they would serve, and we have a use for them."
This was foolish. He should apologize for disturbing them and leave. And that was foolish, too. He had known before Drummond reached him in the street that he was unlikely to leave Saladar alive. There were probably 50 warders in the forest around where he had left his men, if not 100. Johnny and the others would give a good account of themselves, but he had not brought them all this way to die. Yet, if he was a fool to have let a pair of eyes lure him into this trap, he might as well go the last mile for it.
"Arson, theft, and assault, Aes Sedai. Those were the crimes. They were tried, sentenced, and sworn. But I have no objection to remaining here until you are done with them. Mara can act as my dog-robber when you do not need her. I will mark the hours she works for me and count them against her service."
Mara opened her mouth angrily, but almost as if the women had known that she would try to speak, 6 pairs of Aes Sedai eyes swiveled to her in unison. She shifted her shoulders, snapped her mouth shut, and then glared at him, fists rigidly at her sides. He was glad she did not have a knife in her hand. Morel appeared close to laughter.
"Better to choose the other, Lord Bryn. From the way she is looking at you, you would find her far more congenial."
He half expected Amena to go crimson, but she did not. And she was eyeing him appraisingly. She even shared a smile with Morel. Well, she was Damani, after all, and considerably more so than when he saw her last, it seemed. Carlinia, cold enough to make the others seem warm, leaned forward. He was wary of her, and of the big-eyed one named Beonin. He was not sure why, except that if he were in the game of houses here, he would say both women reeked of ambition. Maybe he was involved in exactly that.
"You should be aware," Carlinia said coolly, "that the woman you know as Mara is in reality Swan Sanche, formerly the Amalan seat. Amena is really Leanna Sharif, who was the keeper of the chronicles."
It was all he could do not to gape like a country lout. Now that he knew, he could see it in Mara's face, in Swan's, the face that had made him back down, softened into youth.
"How?"
was all he said. It was almost all he could have managed to say.
"There are some things men are better off not knowing," Shiriam replied coolly, "and most women."
Mara? No, he might as well think of her by her right name, Swan, had been stilled. He knew that.
It must be something to do with stilling.
If that swan-necked Domani had been keeper, he was ready to wager she had been stilled, too. But talking about stilling around Aes Sedai was a good way to find out how tough you were. Besides, when they began going mysterious with you, Aes Sedai would not give a straight answer if you asked whether the sky was blue. They were very good, these Aes Sedai. They had lulled him, then hit hard when his guard was down. He had a sinking feeling that he knew what they were softening him for. It would be interesting to learn whether he was right.
"It does not change the oath they took. If they were still Amalan and Keeper, they could be held to that oath by any law, including that of Tarvalin."
"Since you have no objection to remaining here," Shiriam said, "you may have Swan as your body servant when we do not need her. You may have all 3 of them, if you wish, including Min, whom you apparently know as Serenla, all the time. For some reason, that seemed to irritate Swan as much as what had been said about her. She muttered to herself, not loud enough to be heard.
"And since you have no objections, Lord Bryn, while you remain with us, there is a service that you can give us. The gratitude of Aes Sedai is not inconsiderable," Morvryn said.
"You will be serving the light and justice in serving us," Carlinia added.
Bayonin nodded, speaking in serious tones.
"You served Morghese and Andor faithfully. Serve us as well, and you will not find exile at its end. Nothing we ask of you will go against your honor. Nothing we ask will harm Andor."
Bryn grimaced.
"He was in the game, all right. He sometimes thought that Aes Sedai must have invented Deus Demar. They seemed to play it in their sleep. Battle was surely more bloody, but it was more honest, too. If they meant to pull his strings, then his strings would be pulled. They would manage it one way or another. But it was time to show them he was not a brainless puppet."
"The White Tower is broken," he said flatly. Those Aes Sedai eyes widened, but he gave them no chance to speak. "The Ajahs have split. That is the only reason you can all be here. You certainly don't need an extra sword or two." He eyed Drummond and got a nod in return. "So the only service you can want out of me is to lead an army. To build one first, unless you have other camps with a good many more men than I saw here. And that means you intend to oppose Elida."
Shiryam looked vexed, Anaya worried, and Carlinia on the point of speaking, but he went on.
"Let them listen."
He expected he would be doing a great deal of listening to them in the months to come.
"Very well. I have never liked Elida, and I cannot believe she makes a good Amelin. More importantly, I can make an army to take Tarvalin. So long as you know the taking will be bloody and long. But these are my conditions."
They stiffened to a woman at that, even Swan and Lyanna. Men did not make conditions for Aes Sedai.
"First, the command is mine. You will tell me what to do, but I decide how. You give commands to me, and I give them to the soldiers under me, not you. Not unless I have agreed to it first."
Several mouths opened, Carlinia's and Bayonin's first, but he continued.
"I assign men, I promote them, and I discipline them, not you. Second, if I tell you it can't be done, you will consider what I say. I don't ask to usurp your authority.
Small chance they would allow that.
Yet I do not want to waste men because you do not understand war."
It would happen, but no more than once if he was lucky.
"Third, if you begin this, you will stay the course. I will be putting my head in a noose, and every man who follows along with me. And should you decide half a year from now that Elida as Amelin is preferable to war, you will pull that noose tight for every one of us who can be hunted down. The nations may stay out of a civil war in the Tower, but they'll not let us live if you abandon us. Elida will see to that. If you will not agree to these, then I do not know that I can serve you. Whether you bind me with the power for Drummond here to slit my throat, or I end attainted and hung, death is still the end."
The Aes Sedai did not speak. For a long moment, they stared at him, until the itch between his shoulder blades made him wonder if Newell was ready to plunge a dagger in. Then Shiryam rose, and the others followed her to the windows. He could see their lips moving, but he heard nothing. If they wanted to hide their deliberations behind the One Power, so be it. He was not certain how much of what he wanted he could wring out of them. All, if they were sensible, but Aes Sedai could decide that strange things were sensible. Whatever they decided, he would have to accede with as good a grace as he could muster. It was a perfect trap that he had made for himself. Liana gave him a look and a smile that said as plain as words that he would never know what he had missed. He thought it would have been a fine chase, with him being led by the nose. Domani women never promised half what you thought they did, and they gave only as much as they chose, and changed their minds either way in a blink. The bait in his trap stared at him levelly, strode across the floor until she stood so close that she had to crane her neck to stare up at him, and spoke in a low, furious voice.
"Why did you do this? Why did you follow us? For a barn?"
"For an oath. For a pair of blue eyes." Swan Sanche could not be more than 10 years younger than he, but it was hard to remember that she was Swan Sanche while looking at a face nearly 30 years younger. The eyes were the same, though. Deep blue and strong.
"An oath you gave to me and broke. I should double your time for that."
Dropping her gaze from his, she folded her arms beneath her breasts, growling,
"That has already been taken care of."
"You mean they punished you for oath-breaking? If you've had your bottom switched for it, it doesn't count unless I do it."
Droman's chuckle sounded more than half scandalized. The man had to be still struggling with who Swan had been. Bryn was not certain that he was not, too. And her face darkened until he thought she might have apoplexy.
"My time has already been doubled, if not more, you pile of rancid fish guts! You and your marking hours! Not an hour will count until you have all three of us back at your manor. Not if I must be your dog robber, whatever that is, for 20 years.
So they had planned for this too, Shiryam and the others. He glanced at their conference by the windows. They seemed to have divided into two opposing groups, Shiryam, Anaya, and Morel on one side, Morvrin and Carlinia on the other, with Beonin standing between. They had been ready to give him Swan and Liana and Min as bribe or sop before he ever walked in. They were desperate, which meant he was on the weaker side, but maybe they were desperate enough to give him what he needed for a chance of victory.
"You are taking pleasure from this, aren't you?" Swan said fiercely, the moment his eyes moved. "You buzzard! Burn you for a carp-brained fool! Now that you know who I am, it pleases you that I'll have to bow and scrape to you."
She did not seem to be doing much of that yet.
"Why? Is it because I made you back down over Murindi? Are you so small, Garth Bryn?"
She was trying to make him angry. She realized that she had said too much and did not want to give him time to think on it. Maybe she was no longer Aes Sedai, but manipulation was in her blood.
"You were the Amarlan's seat," he said calmly, "and even a king kisses the Amarlan's ring. I can't say that I liked how you went about it, and we may have a quiet talk sometime on whether it was necessary to do what you did with half the court looking on. But you will remember that I followed Mara Tumanus here, and it was Mara Tumanus I asked for, not Swan Sanche. Since you keep asking why, let me ask it. Why was it so important for me to allow the Mirandians to raid across the border?"
"Because your interference then could have ruined important plans," she said, driving each word home in a tight voice. "Just as your interference with me now can."
The tower had identified a young border lord named Dulain as a man who could one day truly unify Murindi with our help. I could hardly allow the chance your soldiers might kill him. I have work to do here, Lord Bryn. Leave me to do it, and you may see victory. Meddle out of spite, and you ruin everything."
"Whatever your work is, I am sure Shiryam and the others will see you do it. Dulain, I've never heard of him. He cannot be succeeding yet."
It was his opinion that Murindi would remain a patchwork of all but independent lords and ladies until the wheel turned and a new age came. Mirandians called themselves Lugarders or Mindians, or whatever, before they named a nation, if they even bothered to name one. A lord who could unite them, and who had Swan's leash around his throat, could bring a considerable number of men.
He died.
Scarlet spots appeared in her cheeks, and she seemed to struggle with herself.
A month after I left Camelin, she muttered, some Andoran farmer put an arrow through him on a sheep raid.
He could not help laughing.
It was the farmers you should have made kneel, not me. Well, you no longer need concern yourself with such things.
That was certainly true. Whatever use the Aes Sedai had for her, they would never let her near power or decisions again now. He felt pity for her. He could not imagine this woman giving up and dying, but she had lost about as much as it was possible to lose short of dying. On the other hand, he had not liked being called a buzzard or a pile of reeking fish guts. What was the other thing? A carp-brained fool?
From now on, you can concern yourself with keeping my boots clean and my bed made.
Her eyes narrowed to slits.
If that is what you want, Lord Gareth Bryn, you should choose Lyanna. She might be fool enough.
Only barely did he stop himself from goggling. The way women's minds worked never ceased to amaze him.
You vowed to serve me however I choose.
He managed to chuckle. Why was he doing this? He knew who she was and what she was. But those eyes still haunted him, staring at challenge even when she thought there was no hope, just as they were now.
You will discover the kind of man I am, Swan.
He meant it to soothe her after his jest, but from the way her shoulders stiffened, she seemed to take it as a threat. Suddenly he realized that he could hear the Aes Sedai, a soft murmur of voices that went silent immediately. They stood together, staring at him with unreadable expressions.
No, at Swan.
Their eyes followed her as she started back to where Lyanna stood. As if she could feel the pressure of them, each step came a little quicker than the one before. When she turned again, beside the fireplace, her face told no more than theirs. A remarkable woman. He was not sure he could have done as well in her place. The Aes Sedai were waiting for him to approach. When he did, Shiriam said,
"We accept your conditions without reservation, Lord Bryn, and pledge ourselves to hold to them. They are most reasonable."
Carlinia, at least, did not look as though she thought they were reasonable at all, but he did not care. He had been prepared to give up all but the last, let they stay the course, if need be. He knelt where he was, right fist pressed to the scrap of carpet, and they encircled him, each laying a hand on his bowed head. He did not care whether they used the power to bind him to his oath or search for truth. He was not sure they could do either, but who really knew what Aes Sedai could do? And if they meant something else, there was nothing he could do about it. Trapped by a pair of eyes, like a bull-goose fool country boy. He was carp-brained.
"I do pledge and vow that I will serve you faithfully until the White Tower is yours."
Already he was planning. Thad and maybe a warder or two across the river to see what the White Cloaks were up to. Johnny, Barim, and a few others down to Ebedar. It would keep Johnny from swallowing his tongue every time he looked at Mara and Amena. And every man he sent would know how to recruit.
"Building and directing your army to the best of my ability."
When the low buzz of talk in the common room died, Min looked up from the patterns she had been idly sketching on the table with a finger dipped in wine. Loghain stirred, too, for a wonder, but only to stare at the people in the room, or maybe through them. It was hard to tell. Gareth Bryn and that big Ilianer warder came out of the back room first. In the watchful silence, she heard Bryn say, "Tell them an Ebudari tavern maid sent you, or they'll put your head on a stake." The Ilianer roared with laughter. "A dangerous city, Ebudar." Pulling leather gauntlets from behind his sword belt, he stalked out into the street, drawing them on. The talk began to pick up again as Swan approached. Min could not hear what Bryn said to her, but she strode after the warder, snarling to herself. Min had a sinking feeling that the Aes Sedai had decided that they were going to honor that fool oath Swan had been so proud of. Honor it right now. If she could convince herself that the pair of warders lounging against the wall would not notice, she would be out of the door and into Wild Rose's saddle in a flash. Shiryam and the other Aes Sedai came out last, with Lyanna. Mirel sat Lyanna down at one of the tables and began discussing something, while the rest circulated through the room, stopping to speak to each Aes Sedai. Whatever they said, it produced reactions from outright shock to pleased grins, despite that fabled Aes Sedai serenity. "Stay here," Min told Loghain, scraping back her rickety chair. She hoped he was not going to start trouble. He was staring at Aes Sedai faces one by one and appearing to see more than he had in days. "Just stay at this table till I get back, Dalin." She was out of the habit of being around people who knew his real name. "Please?"
"She sold me to Aes Sedai."
It was a shock to hear him speak after being so long silent. He shivered, then nodded.
"I will wait."
Min hesitated, but if two warders could not stop him from doing anything stupid, a room full of Aes Sedai certainly could. When she reached the door, a chunky bay gelding was being led away by a man with the look of a groom. Bryn's horse, she supposed. Their own mounts were nowhere in sight. So much for any dash for freedom. "I'll honor the bloody thing. I will. But they can't keep me from Rand now. I've done what Swan wanted. They have to let me go to him." The only problem was that Aes Sedai decided for themselves what they had to do, and usually what other people had to do as well. Swan nearly knocked her down, bustling back in with a scowl on her face, a blanket roll under her arm, and saddlebags over her shoulder. "Watch Loghain," she hissed under her breath without slowing. "Let no one talk to him." She marched to the foot of the stairs, where a gray-haired woman, a servant, was starting to lead Bryn up, and fell in behind. From the stare she fixed on the man's back, he should have been praying she did not reach for her belt knife. Min smiled at the tall, slender warder who had followed her to the door. He stood 10 feet away, barely glancing at her, but she had no illusions. "We're guests now. Friends." He did not return the smile. "Bloody stone-faced men. Why could they not at least give you a hint what they were thinking?" Loghain was still studying the Aes Sedai when she got back to the table. A fine time for Swan to want him kept silent, just when he was beginning to show life again. She needed to talk to Swan. "Loghain," she said softly, hoping neither of the warders lounging against the wall could hear. They had hardly seemed to breathe since taking their positions, except when one had followed her. "I don't think you should say anything until Mara tells you what she has planned. Not to anyone."
"Mara?"
He gave her a dark sneer.
"You mean Swan Sanche?"
So he remembered what he had heard in his days.
"Does anyone here look as if they want to talk to me?"
He returned to his frowning study. No one did look as if they wanted to talk with a gentled false dragon. Except for the two warders, no one seemed to be paying them any mind at all. If she had not known better, she would have said the Aes Sedai in the room were excited. They had hardly appeared lethargic before, but they certainly seemed to have more energy now, talking in small groups, issuing brisk orders to warders. The papers they had been so intent on largely lay abandoned. Shiryam and the others who had taken Swan away had returned to the room at the back, but Lyanna had two clerks at her table now, both women writing as fast as they could. And a steady stream of Aes Sedai were coming into the inn, disappearing through that rough plank door and not coming out. Whatever had happened in there, Swan had surely stirred them up. Min wished she had Swan at the table, or better yet, somewhere alone, for 5 minutes. Doubtless at that moment she was beating Bryn over the head with his saddlebags. No, Swan would not resort to that for all of her glares. Bryn was not like Loghain, larger than life in every dimension, every emotion. Loghain had managed to overpower Swan for a time with sheer hugeness. Bryn was quiet, reserved, not a small man, certainly, but hardly overbearing. She would not want the man she remembered from Coeur Springs as an enemy, but she did not think that he would hold out long against Swan. He might think she was going to meekly serve out her time as his servant, but Min had no doubts who would end doing what who wanted. She just had to talk to the woman about him. As if Min's thoughts had brought her, Swan came stumping down the stairs, a bundle of white under her arm. Stalked down was nearer truth. If she had had a tail, she would have been lashing it. She paused for one instant, staring at Min and Loghain, then marched toward the door that led to the kitchens. "Stay here," Min cautioned Loghain, "and please say nothing until Swan can talk to you." She was going to have to get used to calling people by their right names again. He did not even look at her. She caught up with Swan in a hallway short of the kitchen. The rattle and splash of pots being scrubbed and dishes washed drifted through gaps where boards had dried in the kitchen door. Swan's eyes widened in alarm. "Why did you leave him? Is he still alive?" "He'll live forever, for all I can see. Swan, no one wants to talk to him, but I have to talk with you." Swan stuffed the white bundle into her arms. "Shirts. What is this?" "Gareth bloody Bryn's bloody laundry," the other woman snarled. "Since you are one of his serving girls, too, you can wash them. I must speak with Loghain before anyone else." Min caught her arm as she tried to brush past. "You can spare 1 minute to listen. When Bryn came in, I had a viewing, an aura, and a bull ripping roses from around its neck, and none of it matters except the aura. I didn't even really understand that, but more than anything else." "How much did you understand?" "If you want to stay alive, you had better stay close to him." Despite the heat, Min shivered. She had only ever had one other viewing with an if in it, and both had been potentially deadly. It was bad enough sometimes knowing what would happen. If she started knowing what might... "All I know is this. If he stays close to you, you live. If he gets too far away for too long, you are going to die. Both of you. I don't know why I should have seen anything about you in his aura, but you seemed like part of it." Swan's smile would have done to peel a pear. "I'd as soon sail in a rotting hull full of last month's eels." "I never thought he'd follow us. Are they really going to make us go with him?" "Oh no, Min. He is going to lead our armies to victory and make my life the pit of doom. So he's going to save my life, is he? I don't know that it is worth it." Taking a deep breath, she smoothed her skirts. "When you have those washed and ironed, bring them to me. I will take them up to him. You can clean his boots before you go to sleep tonight. We have a room, a cubbyhole, near him, so we will be close if he calls to have his bloody pillows plumped." She was gone before Min could protest. Staring down at the wadded shirts, Min was sure that she knew who was going to be doing all of Gareth Bryn's laundry, and it was not Swan Sanche. "Rand bloody Althor. Fall in love with a man and you ended up doing laundry, even if it did belong to another man." When she marched into the kitchen to demand a wash tub and hot water, she was snarling every bit as much as Swan.